highly Tarentine on tenor sax, leads a group of venerable sidemen, including arranger Bob James on piano, Johnny Hammond on the Hammond, Eric Gale on guitar, Ron Carter on bass, and Idris Muhammad on drums. This tune is called Too Blue and appears on Tarentine's 1973 album, Don't Mess with Mr. T. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it's another crazy day in paradise. Well, as you know, Roseanne Barr, the central figure in that, what do I call it? I don't know if it's a comedy production. What do you call it? It's one of those things. I never watched it. But anyway, she was fired after making a rather racist comment on Twitter and immediately found herself minus a program. And it was an opportunity for a great comeback, for her to stretch out and have a second life, a second turn at it, but she messed it up. She said, however, in an apology, and she said to her fans, don't feel sorry for me, I'll be okay, kind of thing. She said that she was probably out of sorts because she was taking Ambien, the sleep aid drug, and kind of hinted that that might have played a role in her racist rant. Today, the maker of Ambien said that racism is not a side effect of the drug. So that puts an end to that. Oh, I tell you, things are going on so crazy, you could hardly keep track. And then you wonder what could possibly have been in these folks' minds, not just with Roseanne Barr, but all across the world. We're seeing some really crazy things happening, and there's no reason why. And we just have to keep going on. Well, I wanted to talk about, as you know, just follow up yesterday a bit, because there's something very important to talk about that. Starbucks, as we discussed yesterday, the global coffee franchise, shut down its more than 8,000 stores across the country yesterday to provide a four-hour voluntary seminar for its employees on unconscious bias in the workplace. The company was praised for its forward-thinking action, the result of a Philadelphia store manager's decision to call the cops on two African-American men awaiting a third at the store for a meeting. They had not yet ordered anything while waiting, and they said they were waiting only a few minutes when one needed to use the restroom and was denied. When the cops were called by the manager, and when they arrived, the manager demanded that the men be arrested and charged with trespassing. Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson would later call the arrests reprehensible and ordered the seminar, which was supposed to get to the matter of how Starbucks employees are interacting with the public, with their customers. We talked yesterday about the many reasons Johnson might have ordered this company-wide training. And today I thought we would tackle this issue of unconscious and implicit bias. Now, we're not naive, and everybody was pretty much on point yesterday when we talked about the fact that this clearly was a company's face-saving move, actually, because the fallout from this incident in the Philadelphia store went viral, and people immediately began to mobilize. And the CEO saw what the implication was if you don't get under this thing quickly. You can have a very major problem on your hands. And this is occurring at a time when, as another caller said yesterday, and was right on point about that, that Starbucks is, it seems that Starbucks is making some moves into neighborhoods, especially neighborhoods that are gentrifying. They do not need any more headaches because of that. So what they do is they look around for a highly recommended trainer, a training company. And there are a bunch of them that have sprouted up because it's a nice way to clean up a mess. And it's a nice way for a company to put on a record that they have been proactive and they are partners with other forward-thinking companies in doing their bit to reduce racism. But you see, everything is a gimmick. They've created this new, well, it's not so new, but it's newish. They've created this, what do you call that? A niche. And that niche is of companies that now consult with other companies to provide these kinds of services. This way, if anybody were to look closely, these companies can prove that they took the matter seriously and engaged an outside company to inform its employees about how they ought to behave in the workplace. This is part of human resources functions now in many, many companies to head off the past. They know what the problems could be because of the history. You've seen a lot of major companies ending up with huge human rights problems, and they could not show that they had done anything. Their human resources training did not adequately prepare employees of the company for the likelihood that there would be this kind of disturbance in the workplace. So many companies head off this matter at the pass. They hire a company, the company comes in and conducts training. Well, that's good. It's a good thing. The question is, does it do much really to avoid the problem of racism in the workplace? Does it prepare a company to prepare its employees about this question, this matter of racism in the workplace? Or is it just one of those things that helps a company defend itself, if it should come to that? To say, well, look, we did everything we could. We had the seminars and everything, and they got the manuals and whatnot. But this is an interesting question when it comes to a company like Starbucks. Look, it's a very simple function that most of its employees have. People come in, they want coffee. All right. They don't need extended interaction. It's a straight service that they perform. The customer gets the coffee and takes off. end of interaction. Now, I know that there, in that short period of time, in that brief moment, you could have some things going wrong. But for the most part, the employees who are being, let's say yesterday, who were being exposed to this unconscious bias seminar, they're not, for the most part, going to be that involved with the customers. And it's a straight deal. I'd like some coffee. And the response is, here it is. End of transaction. Now, that's not the same for the managers. The managers have more interaction and more responsibility and therefore require a bit more skill because they are overseeing things. They are, in fact, the face of the company when it comes to it. They're running the company in their store according to company guidelines. So I could see where a Starbucks would be concerned about the conduct of its managers because the managers actually reinforce the brand of the company at the store level, one-on-one, right? And this is a problem. I discussed yesterday how within a month, it didn't even take a month, Starbucks had neutralized reactions against it from the people who really and truly were at the center of this issue. And that is the two young men who were supposedly trespassing, according to the manager, and who were arrested for trespassing. They were the ones, the community responded appropriately. And when I say community, I mean across the board, blacks, whites, Latinos, everybody learning about this incident seemed outraged by it, and quite correctly so. So they responded appropriately. They were calling for boycotts. They sent this interaction, which they caught on video. They sent it, and it was viral. It was a major weapon against Starbucks. They did the right thing. It was the men who they were doing this in behalf of who neutralized everything. They said, oh, no, we don't want any fuss. Are we talking with Starbucks? And soon enough, it was announced that there was a settlement. Okay? I'm saying this because we've been down this road many, many times. The community was justifiably outraged. The victims, in whose behalf, essentially, the community was responding, did everything possible to quash it. And then it was announced that there was a settlement. Now, there was no crime. Nobody lodged a complaint. It didn't even get to that point. They, quote, settled, unquote, for an undisclosed amount of money. We don't know how much, but they settled. And therefore, gave Starbucks the opportunity and the time to get on top of this. We've seen this a lot. where a community is outraged about an action. You've seen it in many of these police killings. Next thing we hear is a settlement. And in this case, we hear about a settlement with no complaint filed, nothing. They just decided they would accept whatever it is that Starbucks put forward on the table as a sign of an act of contrition. We're sorry. Okay, so they did that. And then the number two thing in the 1-2 punch, which was what I call the Starbucks defensive, was they got one of these training companies to come in, and they got some high profile blacks, the entertainer slash poet slash rap artist slash actor Common, as he prefers to be called, and the NAACP, which should have been suing. I mean, you have to break this down to understand what's going on here. This is not the training seminar. This is a defense mechanism. So they bring in the NAACP, and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which should be busy defending people who have been wronged all over this country. They come in as advisors to the project. So now we have the three elements covered. We have the direct victims, the two guys who were arrested for trespassing. And then you have a high-profile entertainer who somehow was transmuted yesterday into a kind of coach. No credentials, but it's okay. He's high-profile. He comes in to talk whatever it is he's going to be talking about healing and what we have to do to get along with each other and so forth. And we have a civil rights organization, the leading civil rights legal organization, coming in an advisory capacity, because it's so clear. They didn't come in there to chastise Starbucks. So all the people who got this wrong were blacks. Every single one. They have no defense. The proper thing to do was to let Starbucks suffer. That's the right thing to do. Because if in 2018 you're telling me that people have to be specifically trained in how to just conduct business, but according to your manual. When that manager said, hey, I'm calling the cops come, and she says, I want those two men arrested, the cops obliged. And then when she specifically mentioned the charge she wanted them charged with, that's what they were charged with. So in a case where there was a wonderful opportunity, because here we saw the gathering of all kinds of people on the basis of ethics. This was an ethical moment, and everybody who gathered understood it to be so. Starbucks behaved not only illegally, but unethically. And the training was not supposed to be really about the employees. The training should have been of Starbucks managers, who presumably are implementing Starbucks policy. here was an exquisite moment, and the blacks involved were the ones who took the heat off of Starbucks. We've seen this so many times. Now, what is this ethical, it's not ethical, but conscious, unconscious bias about? I've been doing a little reading of it. I mean, what it proposes, and it assigns no blame. And to my mind, we got to have some blame assigned here. Somebody's got to be blamed. It operates on the principle that people come to what they do for a living with the sum total of their experiences in life. That's good. I agree. But how is it possible that there is no blame to be assigned when they go afoul like this? Well, you know, that's part of the teaching of it, is to absolve everybody of blame and start anew to discover how these biases and prejudices creep into our minds and hearts. You can't be blamed for how this works in your individual case. This is essentially the teaching. So we start from a point of view that we are not ready to blame anybody. I say that's a pretty false notion. At some point, when you do things like this, there is somebody or something to be blamed for it. You can't tell me that you accept that the universal attitude of Starbucks is that it will basically come down hard on its African-American customers, even to the point of calling the cops and charging them with trespassing, that was unintentional, that nobody suffers blame for thinking that way and then acting that way. But these are not important questions and issues for a company like Starbucks to discuss. They are interested primarily of offering evidence, should it come to that, in a court of law, that they have done all it can do, and even more than that, to head off these kinds of unpleasantries. I would say that's a prelude to blame. If after all of this, a manager were to do the same thing, I am sure Starbucks is going to say, well, he did the wrong thing. He's out of here. You see? We have in the United States a very interesting parallel industry that accompanies major industries that routinely are doing bad things. And they develop a scientific basis for the defense of these things. So that in the Starbucks example, you can't say that the woman was racist, the manager. You can't say that she broke the law. You can only say that, well, perhaps she wasn't aware of what she was doing, and what she was doing had such racial implications. You can't blame the cops. We talked about this when it happened. The cops came in prepared to disregard the victims and to pay attention to and to execute the demand of the white manager. In all three instances that I discussed that day, I said the most important thing to pay attention to here is the role of the cops. You see. So I wondered whether what you thought of this thing. I've been reading quite a lot. And, you know, I've been exposed to this kind of stuff before. But I dare anybody to explain to me that the average American is unaware of racism. Unaware. Totally unaware that it exists. And that they, in one way or the other, deal with it almost on a daily basis, either as a victim or as a victimizer. You don't need to have, in my neck of the woods, we all need to have seminars on implicit and unconscious bias. As a matter of fact, I will make the case, we need to be very conscious. We do not need unconscious bias. We need consciousness about it. We know how, we need to know how to spot it. We need to know how to react to it. But, so we learned a couple of things out of that entire exercise. We learned that A, in the first instance, the community as a community responded and responded appropriately. Very proactively, very vigorously, and very courageously and righteously. We saw that the men directly affected by all of this decided they did not want the responsibility of carrying this fight forward. They agreed to sell the transgressions against them for some undisclosed amount of money. In their minds, this was the appropriate way to end this whole thing. They're entitled to do that, but it's important that we know that they did it. Thirdly, we have the company playing a racist game. This is a racist situation. You talk about unconscious bias. They sought out a high-profile black entertainer and the oldest and leading civil rights legal organization to help them defuse. They had no business to help them defuse the situation. And they are still promoting this idea of unconscious bias, which is drivel. You could have unconscious bias if you're unconscious. Our world, the world other than the white supremacist world, needs to carry that bias very consciously because it relates to survival. any oppressed people talking about unconscious bias, they're crazy. But that shows you the mentality of corporations. If they can further tamper with the last bit of cognition that you have at work, they'll do so. So this is how you analyze this whole thing. It is a very significant development, only in the sense that it should give us pause to see how things are actually meticulously organized to look nothing like they really are. I'll take a break. We come back and we chat right after this. You're listening to PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the program is Lead Stories. Your thoughts about little speech I gave a minute ago about how we are to interpret things and how things are presented to us in such a way that the reality is distorted or even denied. And they're made to look exactly as they want you to make it look to yourself. This is a very big thing. It speaks to the colonization of our minds, and we forget our guards are always down. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Eutrice, and greetings to your audience. I'm glad that you're discussing this. You know, I was listening to you, and I couldn't help but think about several things. I'm going to just mention a few. These young men who took the settlement and didn't want the responsibility of the fight, I was reminded and wondering if their reaction might be based on historical trauma. I'm reminded of how I've read stories of young girls and sometimes boys who've been sexually molested in their families of origin. And when it's exposed and discovered, you know, sometimes the child, which doesn't want that responsibility to fight, although the responsibility shouldn't be on the child, but it falls on the child to fight that, you know, to fight and redeem themselves about what happened. So I'm wondering if there's a little trauma going on with these young men. I have no way of knowing. You spoke of the colonial mind, and I'm suspect. I'm thinking there may as well be a traumatic mind that.
I just think they're self-centered, and they decided, and that may be an unfortunate way to interpret what they did, but I see it as an unwillingness. People are, you know, absorbed in what they're doing, and they don't have time for what they see as extracurricular activities, and it seems as if this was the mindset. The mindset was that they are involved in something and that is to their benefit, and they do not want the responsibility of being pushed in another direction. I could understand that.
Okay.
But at another time, though, I'm saying that if they dug even a little couple of inches into their collective past, they would see how important it is. They didn't honor the community at all. They didn't thank the community for its protection of them or the advocacy of the community. And what was striking was that this was a panorama if you will, of people coming together, all kinds of people coming together, because they were so disturbed by the implications of this arrest at the store. So they didn't get it, and they didn't want to get it, as far as I'm concerned. And that was most unfortunate.
Okay, I see. A couple
Thank
more things
real quick. Call.
No, you treat.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to speak briefly about what I think may be the so-called anti-racism seminar industry stuff. You know what I'm saying? I myself have attended a few, and I understand that there's several, including the unconscious bias ones, the conference on white privilege, blah, 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 where the founder is married to a woman of European descent, what have you. But the deal is, these efforts or seminars are out there, but racism is still alive and well. I don't know how, that makes me wonder, you know, just how effective they are. And in fact, as I said, I attended a few in Detroit, and some of the same people who, white folks who attended those things, are turned out to be some of the major gentrifiers in the city. I didn't know it at the time. And let me say this briefly. I like what Anne Braden, how she defined racism back in 1991. She says as follows. I'll be brief. She says, I define racism in this age that we live in as the assumption that everything, at every level, and it's also an unconscious assumption on the part of whites, should be run by whites for the benefit of whites. I see that system alive and well. And unfortunately, I am a victim of it. One last question. This thing, those folks who talk about personal responsibility, I'm wondering if being responsible for your biases is also a part of that. And I like what you said about the unconscious
bias.
Well,
as a corporation, since a corporation is a person, we have to hold the corporation responsible for its awful treatment of these two men. Whether they want to be represented by the community or not, the community was remarkable in its response. Thanks, Leon. Jeff from New Jersey, you're on the air.
How you doing? I finally got what you were saying. One of the things in the in this case, and I guess in the other cases when you're talking about having companies go out and do this bias training, is that they consider black people different. Different in how you get a cup of coffee. That's ridiculous. And it's putting the blame on the black people to say, you didn't tell us how to treat you. And so
I get that.
You know, it
has spawned an industry.
Yes. And it's just a matter of, you know, way to spread around some money to some people who kiss ass, basically. You know, I got sick yesterday finding out that Common and the defense fund for the NAACP was participating in this. The young men, I can understand. They were businessmen. They saw some money, able maybe to get their projects off the ground. And they saw that they didn't see the future, because I guarantee you they didn't consult the lawyer. Because a lawyer would have went after some more money and held out a little longer so he can get his cut. But they also didn't confer with any of the elders in the community either, because they may have instructed them to say, listen, you hold the cards here. You don't need to settle. You know, you hold the cards. You have the power right now. And, you know, just a quick decision, the quick money, the situation makes me kind of sick. I can see in cases of police shootings where you may not get your justice. You know, we don't know, you know, we saw in the Rodney King incident, these cops beat the hell out of the man and nothing happened. So that's the kind of a fear that, you know, well, nothing will happen. We'll get the money. So we just may not even go to trial, just take the money. You know, so I understand that mentality. But in this case, these men, I don't know. It just made me sick to my stomach to hear who was participating in this, you know. But Dr. Joy DeGruy, I don't know if you've ever had her on. She may be able to give you some clarity. Dr. Joy DeGruy, she wrote Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know.
Yeah, she dug into this type of mentality, you know, when she began to look at how blacks are, you know, inherently at this point in time through our training that we go to make sure that the white people are okay. You know, before we think we go to make sure that we're okay. But that's just the way it's been. You know, we have a fear of what repercussions might be if they're afraid. You know, so we make sure that they're okay and that they're comfortable and they're not afraid. And that, you know, so maybe part of the situation. But I'm flabbergasted at this the transaction.
Well, it's interesting, but it's important for us to pay attention. You see, because hopefully it tells us something about where we are. It's very important to stop every now and then when these things happen. They seem so inconsequential, you know, no big deal. But when you start just lifting the scales off the beast, you see exactly what it is. Thank you, Jeff, for your call. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on this whole Starbucks situation. Last week, I heard this report about a security company called Allied Security. They were basically, their supervisors were not giving their employees bathroom breaks, and all at the same time while monitoring them on video camera, closed-circuit television. It seems like this the situation with the Starbucks is something that's very common in these corporations, where these corporations are they don't hold the management you know, accountable for the wrongs that they do. But let's say, for instance, if a barista or a lower level employee was to do something similar to that, they probably would have been fired. I'm wondering, was this supervisor that called the police, was that supervisor fired, or are they still on the job?
Well, we don't know whether she was fired or not, but we do know she's no longer with the company.
Okay. All right. At least that, because because I also blame the law enforcement, because either these young men broke the law or they did not break the law. You know, because it seems like corporations and the Justice Department work hand in hand with each other, whether it's lawsuits, paying people off, and you know, with settlements and whatnot. And it just continues and goes on and on and on. You know, management seems to get away with it. They don't hold themselves accountable. And this whole unconscious racism crap is basically just them denying that they did anything wrong. That's all it comes down to.
Well, you see, this is a question that I have. In the three examples that I had raised a couple of weeks ago of how the police functioned once they were called, and they were called by white women, it was not important at all to establish, for example, in the Starbucks case, what exactly is trespassing. And why would the police proceed to arrest these men? Simply because the manager asked that this be done? Were the police unable to determine independently? Were they not able to call their supervisor to find out if trespassing is a legitimate charge at which to arrest somebody at a Starbucks? Hello, Jeff? Tony? Are you there?
Yes.
There's a lot of activity going on there that allows me to not hear you very well. Well, anyway, the role of the police. We see no question at all of the police once they arrive about the legitimacy of this charge. And who is this woman, the manager, to decide what the young men should be charged with. Is there such a thing? Did they ask to see signs posted around the Starbucks store that you risk arrest if, and arrest for trespassing if you don't order something within a certain amount of time? I mean, these are the things that the police should do, but they don't do it. They never questioned any of the women who were complaining about the charges that they reported. One woman said, "I feel uncomfortable with these two Native American men on a college tour." And the cops proceeded to see if they could straighten that out and make her feel good. But that meant that they were searching these young men's pockets and making them identify themselves. And they started out regarding these two young men who were on the same tour of this with this woman and her daughter, trying to see whether the University of Colorado was someplace that they wanted to go. So immediately they lost their rights. Or the young man moving into his new apartment, the cops never bothered to go ask the woman who filed a complaint, who called in a complaint, wrong complaint, by the way, that could have cost him his life. She calls in to say that somebody's burglarizing the building and has a large gun. So no effort was made to verify any of the so-called facts of these complaints. And in each instance, the lives of people were really in jeopardy. So we have to look at these things and ask questions. It's not enough for Starbucks to say, "Oh, look, we have a training seminar." No, the company behaved badly. The company was wrong. The company violated people's constitutional rights. The company deserved the call for a boycott. And that just doesn't go away with some training seminar, which pretty much starts on the premise that nobody is responsible. Nobody's to be blamed for how they act. No blame is assigned. That's a lot of crap. Thanks, Tony, for your call. 888-874-4888. We have a couple of minutes left to take your call. I know it sounds like I'm being petty. I know it sounds like I'm being, you know, outrageously petty. But you think about it and what the seminar meant yesterday. What it is, the time that we are existing in, when people, especially corporations and the powerful, when they have all kinds of ways of twisting our reality, making it seem that, well, you know, they're on the up and up. But look at the way also in which our representatives, if you will, the people who are our ambassadors in the field, in this case, in the field of entertainment, in the field of law, how they were used and how they agreed to be used to defuse a really bad situation. This is egregious. But we see that as part of what we suffer as a group, as an oppressed group. People from our own community do these outrageous things. And they will tell you to your face what they were attempting to do was to contribute meaningfully to our community. No. You were there to collect a heavy fee. In the case of common, you're not trained. You're not bringing a wealth of education to what it is you talk about. They just need you to be there. You have a recognizable name, and we will pay you whatever it is you agree to. But the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, my goodness. I mean, is there no principle for which you will stand after all? Could you be bought for any and everything? This is so sad. It's a sad, sad day. But hopefully we will learn something from it and move along, because we have to. I just didn't intend it, but I saw it yesterday, and there wasn't time to really get into what this was about. And like I say, many people would say, well, geez, you're really picking at things. This is not a big deal. This is not a big case. Well, to me it is, and for the reasons I've identified. We've gone through this all the time. Every single time when there's a major catastrophe or major issue in our communities where people are genuinely hurt, genuinely suffering, you have those people just waiting in the wings to collect money for their services, and their services have to do with putting out the fire, which is a righteous fire, which is an absolutely righteous fire. And you see how in these ways they suddenly take this on as a personal project, rejecting the notion and the reality that this concerns all of us. This concerns all of us. They sit at the table and they agree as to what it is they're going to be paid for their services to dismantle, to disassemble, to put the fire out. And the very credentials that they have because the community supported them, those are the credentials that are up for sale. How despicable. And how sad. Well, thanks so much for listening today and allowing us all to express our views about the situation. Stay tuned. Coming up next is, I forget, the Global Alert News. I'm going to take it to that. And we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.